I recently heard a story of a lonely widower who lost his life savings. It seemed that he had fallen in love with someone on the internet who seemed like his ideal woman, the person to be his bride and take the place of the woman he had loved for so many years and now mourned. Except that after, just as they were planning to really meet, she said she wired him that she was all of a sudden in trouble overseas and she needed money to get back. You know what the story goes from there, right? It was an internet scam. He sent her the money and never saw her or the money. He felt too foolish to tell anyone. Not even his children, who could have supported him, not even the police, who might have helped him get some of his money back. He didn't want anyone to know that he was a fool. Have you been called a fool? It is a shameful identity. It means you really don't know what you're doing. You're either stupid or ignorant, maybe totally incompetent. It's especially painful if the accusation is made by someone that you care about, someone whose approval you seek. I still remember how I felt 50 years ago when I was called a fool for visibly lamenting the end of an adolescent romance. I am sure that being called a fool stung more than the breakup of the relationship. Think then how the man in Jesus' parable felt when at the end of his life he was called a fool by God. God, who really knows us, who wants life abundant for us, who wants us to use our lives and all the gifts he gives us to have that fullness of life. Today's gospel tells the story of the man some call the barn guy, a man rich with the bounty of the earth, so bountiful, in fact, that he didn't have barns to store it. You know, when I hear this story, I think of big agribusiness, but you've got to think ancient Near East, you know, where they didn't have big structures. Farmers would just have little sheds or huts or something. But he had such harvest that he had to tear down what he had and build newer, bigger barns as he relished his grains and goods. It was kind of, I think the story is painting a picture of kind of an ancient days Scrooge. And then having one of those deep inner private conversations that we humans sometimes have with ourselves, he said to himself in a congratulatory manner, "Soul, you have ample goods, resources, and wealth. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry." But as Jesus spins out the story, you know there's always a catch. If you don't wake up tomorrow morning, where will those treasures be? Whose treasures will they be? What have you spent your life doing? One preaching professor says about today's gospel reading, it's not about the money, not in this parable or in this life. This is a parable about twisted priorities. The barn guy's problem isn't that he's had great rich harvest or that he wants to plan for the future. The problem is that his good fortune has curved his vision in an arc so that everything he sees starts and ends with himself. He's living in isolation from God and his neighbor. He is not having a conversation with a spouse or a friend or a spiritual companion, but only with himself I will do this. I will have this. I will keep this. I will say to my soul, congratulations. It is a totally egocentric consciousness and conversation that is on display here. That is why he is a fool. He has fallen prey to the notion that life, particularly the good life, consists of having and holding on to possessions. In his case, grain. In Scrooge's case, or in our society, that is usually measured in dollars. Either way, they are ultimately of no use to us. In an isolated lesson, or as an isolated lesson, it might be easy to turn this parable into a moral lesson. Actually, I thought of a couple we might turn it into. Moral lesson number one, you can't take it with you. There's a great joke about that. I thought I'd share it with you just for fun. So a man knows that he might die, so he gives three friends $50,000 each to put in his casket at his funeral when he dies. After the funeral, these three friends meet. They're at the bar, and they've had a couple, and one of them finally says, well, did you do it? The first friend said, well, I was his contractor, and he owed me $5,000, so I kept the five out to pay off his debt. I won't have to worry about waiting until the will's probated, and I put the rest in. Second friend was a priest. He said, I gotta admit, I took out $10,000 and put it in my discretionary account to give to the poor. I just couldn't see putting it all in the casket. His third friend was a lawyer. He said, shame on you. I cannot believe you would do that. You betray a sacred trust. I put in a check for the entire amount. No offense to Bob Feldman or any of the lawyers out there. My son is a lawyer and he's honest. But you, it's true, you can't take it with you, but that's not what the parable is about. Moral lesson two, don't be possessed by your possessions, something that your grandmother might have taught you. There's a great debate in theology about possessions and being attached or detached from our possessions. And if the theory posits that if you're detached from your possessions, then it's okay. But I find some problems with this theory about detachment. First of all, it's just sheer rationalization sometimes. The idea was originally, I think, cultivated by religious orders justifying their huge wealth, even though they had taken vows of poverty. So, well, yes, we have the finest wines and the best lands and the freshest food and the best cooks and the best housing, but we're detached from it. So it can be a rationalization. Second, it's easier, I have noticed, to be detached from someone else's possession than your own. Someone who has more than I have should be detached from their possession so that they can share it with me. For example, kids might think that their parents should be detached from something that they, the kids, could use. Or another example is when Paul and I were getting ready to move from our big house in Syracuse to a small apartment in New York. We had a couple rooms that were literally lined with books. And I said to Paul, you know, you've really got to get rid of some of those books. Some of them you've had since high school. They really have to go. So Paul called in a used book salesperson and gave him the pick of the library, and some of the books he took were mine, not what I had expected. What a shock that was. It was easy for me to be detached from his books. Or even something simple like when my kids were teenagers, telling them for the 10 millionth time, please don't put a cold, sweaty glass on the wood coffee table. And they would say, Mom, you say things are only things. They didn't have trouble being detached from my things at all. A third problem with detachment is it's easier to be detached when someone else is providing the security in your life. Twice in my 20s, I divested of everything I owned except what I could carry in a backpack. It was great. It was liberating. It was freeing. It was easy. I don't know how I felt I was going to live the following year, but I knew I would because I had before. Plus, I did have parents who I knew would never let me starve. I had no responsibilities to anyone else. And most importantly, retirement and the end of new income was not looming before me. Could I give away everything I own except what would fit in the backpack now? I don't think so. And I don't think that's what Jesus was teaching against anyway. Not responsible planning. But even if we could be detached from our belongings, would that make it okay to have all that we could acquire? To make that kind of what defined us? Here's an example, a case for you to think about. When I lived in New York City, I lived in the wealthiest zip code in the United States. Some of my parishioners had very large sums of money and thought nothing of spending $2,000 for a handbag. And that was kind of considered normal. But one of my parishioners, who was carrying a Coach bag at the time, which I didn't even know what that was before I moved to New York, by the way, said, "See that baby there? That baby has a $2,000 outfit on." And I said, "No, yep." And she said, "Well, if they can afford it, why not?" Why not indeed? Now, these parishioners were probably not attached to these clothes. They bought them. When they were done, they'd throw them away or give them to someone else or put them in the poor bag or whatever they did. And yet, is it okay for a baby to wear $2,000 outfits when some babies don't have clothes or diapers or food? It's a question. Is it okay for us to have however much we can have? So I'm just not convinced that detachment is the way of the gospel. In the greater scope of Jesus' teaching, this parable is one of many about what it means to follow Jesus. Our wonderful presiding bishop, Bishop Michael Curry, whom you should try to hear if you ever get a chance in person or on the internet, says this is what Jesus says: "Follow me, and I will show you how to become more than you ever dreamed. I will help you to change the world from the nightmare it often is into the dream that God intends. Help you to change the world from the nightmare it often is into the dream that God intends. I believe this is what gives life the full meaning that God intends. And it just doesn't happen when we are totally focused on acquisition of possessions." The parable prompts me to ask, when I am gone, what will be the legacy of my life? How will I be remembered? Will the disposition of my resources before and after my death reflect my commitment to the movement Jesus began to transform the world? If it makes you think about that, you might ask yourself, what does my charge account or my checkbook tell me? How do I spend my money if I categorize it? What does my calendar tell me? How do I use this finite bit of time that I've been given on the earth? What does my will tell me? And if you don't have one, please go make one next week. What does my will tell me? How will I dispose of my possessions after my death? We are all invited to think about these things now, so that at the end of our lives, we will never have to have the regrets of a fool, but hear instead, "Well done, good and faithful servant." Amen.